An architectural pactus.
Woo!
All right.
Hey there! Welcome to Season 12 of She Builds Podcast, where we share stories about women in the design and construction field, one lady at a time.
This season's theme is government, civic work, and urban planning. We're talking about ladies who were involved in public projects or services.
You know the deal. We're not experts. We're just sharing stories about the information that we find as friends having a chit-chat, fun conversation. If you find an error, send us an email and we will all continue learning.
Okay. So on today's episode, we will talk about Hatshepsut, an Egyptian pharaoh who was one of the most prolific builders in ancient Egypt. I'm Lizzie Rahr, working on a quilt in San Francisco.
Hi, everyone. I'm Nurjeri Rivas, working on my coloring book in Houston, Texas.
And I'm Jessica Rogers, up in the gym, just working on my fitness. She's my witness. Okay, but I'm based out of Miami, Florida.
Amazing. All right, ladies, we are headed to ancient Egypt today.
Ooh, so excited for this. Going back.
I'm so excited. You know, the further we go back in history, the more I love it. I thought I would take on Hatshepsut eventually, but when you said you wanted to tell her story, I was like a little bit jealous, but also a lot awesome.
Say that you're a history nerd without saying you're history nerds. We like to go way back in history.
I'm sorry.
That's right. I've actually wanted to do an episode on her for like a couple of years, but was a little bit overwhelmed by it. But when this season, the topic, it felt very appropriate. So I was like, okay, I gotta do it.
Yeah.
Because there's both like a lot of information about her, but it's also old. So there's like not, you know what I mean? So it's like a weird, anyway. But we will try to condense it and tell the story of Hatshepsut today.
All right.
So she was born around 1500 BCE. Her birth year range is 1505 to 1495 BCE. So we've got 10 years to choose from, and that's as specific as we're going to get.
You know, there's lots of that going on this season.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, for this one, I think it's the most understandable because, you know.
That's true. So she was born during the 18th dynasty of the New Kingdom in Egypt. All right, so there's a lot of background info that we're going to cover to make sure the story makes sense. So extra disclaimer that I am not an Egyptologist. So this will be broad for time's sake.
Yes. Give me the broad background story, please.
Yeah, the background info will be nice. We are talking about ancient Egypt here.
So there are several eras during ancient Egypt, which go back as far as 3000 BCE at the start of the first dynasty. For context, the Old Kingdom era was the period where the Great Pyramids were built, so like 2600 BCE. So by the time she's born, the pyramids are already built. Then that Old Kingdom collapsed. There was a first intermediate period, followed by the Middle Kingdom, and a second intermediate period, before we arrive at the New Kingdom, which was a very prosperous time in Egypt, and this is where our story begins in Thebes, which today is Luxor.
My gosh, 3000 BCE? Oh my God, Common Era is not even that old yet.
I know.
Anyway, Thebes, we've arrived.
I know our show is basically a history lesson, but we are going like way back.
So previous kings had waged wars that made the Egyptians rich. Gold was flowing.
Uh-oh.
And despite this, King Amenhotep I had a problem. He had been ruling for 20 years, and he didn't have any children. Not just no sons, which was also a problem, but no children at all.
Yeah, that would be a problem when it comes to kingdoms and empires. They're all looking for the heirs.
At first, I thought you were going to say he had a gambling problem and lost all the kingdom's money.
All that gold. Gone. My initial thought was that he had all this money and didn't know what to build. Like, total brain fog, you know? He was like, I don't know. And then insert, like, Our Lady or something.
He needed us to design him some buildings.
Yeah.
But, okay, so no children. Was he infertile?
I'm not sure, but it sounds like it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it also sounds like he didn't have any brothers to step in. Mm. So the throne passed to a middle-aged elite man named Thutmose. He would become King Thutmose I. I have no idea what his royal connection was or how distant it was, but he got the promotion.
I was just wondering, where did Thutmose come from?
Yeah. It would be cool.
A distant connection.
Somebody.
Somebody.
Yeah, it would be cool to know where he came from. If we watch enough Game of Thrones, we know enough that he wasn't some dude walking down the street, but had to have been connected somehow.
True. He was probably really well connected and smart, let's hope.
Yep.
Yeah. So, like his predecessor, he expanded Egypt's borders and brought in more monies. Oh. He also started building temples in stone. He also really elevated the god Amun-Re, who will be an important player in today's story.
Mythology is coming into play? This is about to become my favorite episode of all time.
Yes.
Egyptians, there's lots of gods to be had, so, you know.
Love it. My Egyptian history is a little rusty. Is there a significance that he was building in stone? Or maybe it was like the influence of Europe? I don't know.
Well, I'm guessing it's a material that they had in abundance, right? What were they building before they figured out how to use stone? Well, I guess mud.
That's what I thought. So that's why the intro to stone makes it interesting.
Right. So it was, I mean, obviously, like with the pyramids, they had built in stone previously. But I think, too, once they were in a period of such abundance and flourishing, there are quarries in the southern part of the country, like further up the Nile. There were times where those were separate. And anyway, it was sort of a, like, yes, they were building in mud before. And it was also an indication of the prosperous time and also for him to create more permanence in what he built and his reign.
Got it.
Money.
Kinda. Yeah. So, Amun-Re was the chief deity of Egypt at the time. He was a creator god. And in order for him to create, offerings needed to be made to him at his temple in order to fuel him so that he could keep creating. Because if he stopped creating, then Egypt and the cosmos would stop. And the Nile might stop flooding. So then there's no crops, etc.
That makes sense.
Sounds cool.
So that's the background on Amun-Re, but back to our guy, Thutmose I. Now he's king. He gets married to a woman who was related to Amenhotep I, possibly Amenhotep's sister. I'm unclear on that. But this was in order to secure his position as the new king or pharaoh, to like tie him more to the previous
royalty.
Yes, exactly. This woman's name is Ames. Now, Ames becomes the king's great wife because this is also a multiple wives, concubine situation. But Ames is the highest status wife. She gives birth to a daughter, Hatshepsut.
Ooh.
I'm excited.
Mm-hmm. Janice just smiling. Like,
because this story is so interesting already and we're not even that far in.
Yeah.
It was like, context, context, here's Hatshepsut.
And here she is.
Yeah, right? Like, enter the lady of our story.
Yes. So growing up, Hatshepsut would have been tutored privately and taught to read and write, which was unusual for a girl during this time.
All right. Liking Mr. Out of Left Field Thutmose I, that he's supporting his daughter's education. Get your brain on, Hatshepsut.
I love this. You see, even back then there were some good supportive papas.
Yes. And so partly had to do with she was the oldest daughter of the king's great wife. So she was training to not only become the future king's wife, but also the wife of the god Amun-Re.
Wait, what? Since when does Amun-Re take mortal wives?
Ooh.
Right. So our guy Amun-Re, he has a human wife called the god's wife. Remember how I said that they were like, if he doesn't get fueled, he stops creating and the world ends, right? So the god's wife was integral to make sure offerings were made to Amun-Re and that he kept creating. And so the god's wife, it was the highest position of power that a woman could have.
Interesting. I know it's spiritual, but curious to know this gets decided. Is the god's wife a priestess, a pretty young thing, another daughter of a royal?
Good question. She sounds like a project manager of the god-offering endeavor to me, like a pretty high position indeed.
Yeah, so it's not only like love, but also admin.
Maybe. Maybe it's just since I've been project managing, that's where my head goes.
Or maybe there's like a harem of lady secretaries managing these offerings, and then the head is like the manager of the ladies.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, so I'll explain some of those questions as we go on, but it was more than just admin. Yeah, she had to bring him like food, song and dance, among other things, and make sure that he was taken care of. And she could go into the innermost parts of the temple. The only person like religiously who was higher than her was the high priest of Amun-Re. So Hatshepsut is in training to be the next king's great wife and the god's wife. So with that in mind, this is why she was very highly educated.
I'll take it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Also, being as prominent a child as she was, she would have often been close to her father during ceremonies, etc., and probably had a window into him ruling. Mm. She would read and copy literature as well as histories of kings past, which also would have been good training for leadership.
I'm so loving this, by the way.
Same here.
Mm-hmm. So Hatshepsut's mom was not the god's wife. So she was trained by the current god's wife, Amez Nefertari.
Okay, back to Jessica's comments a while back. Can you explain to us how the god's wife is selected? Also, did they run out of names? Why is everyone named Amis?
I'm not sure. So the god's wife, it's not an inherited role passed down through the female line. It was a political role that was associated with whichever king was sitting on the throne. So Amez Nefertari was... Whoa, I should probably check this. I think she was the wife of Amenhotep I.
Somehow connected to him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Amez Nefertari was somehow connected to Amenhotep I, who had been king before Thutmose I. So that's why she was the god's wife. Yeah. So it had more to do with who was the king at the time.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
This was also because it held political weight for the king to have his family in that position because the religious aspect was so tied to power and whatnot. Mm. So Hatshepsut was very young when she became the god's wife, maybe 9 or 10.
Whoa. Mm.
Okay, so the god's wife trains the king's great wife, and the first daughter of the great king's wife automatically becomes the wife of the god's wife.
Kinda, yeah.
In this case.
Yeah, in this case.
The age 9 or 10 surprisingly doesn't faze me at this point. As much as this, like, structured arrangement of things.
I wish I could say that, but I was still a little bit shocked. I'm not a fan of the child wife situation, but like you said, since we're in the 1500 BCE, I'm going to let this go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, again, for more context, the average life expectancy in Egypt at this time is early 30s. 50s for an elite man with good nutrition. So... we're going to be throwing out some pretty young ages all around, so prep yourself for that.
Okay, I feel ready now.
Heavy emphasis on prep yourself for these ages and life expectancies, I think, because we're talking about a 9-year-old.
Yeah.
And, you know, I figured because of the life expectancy at that point, so I'm not, like, totally surprised. I mean, we are talking about the era of plagues and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Okay. How far are we from Moses right now? I'm going to look this up. Okay. Moses was around the late 1200s. So we're not seeing his plagues yet.
Right. That's further into the new kingdom. So not yet. But still a lot of disease, and many kids don't make it past infancy and early childhood.
Yeah. That is still so wild to me.
Yeah. All right. Hatshepsut is the god's wife now, and she's just waiting now to find out which of her brothers is going to be king so that she can take on her other future role of being the king's great wife.
Wait, what? Totally missed that, and I guess it makes sense if we remember the Game of Thrones metaphor.
Still, this is so ew. I need to recognize that I'm looking at this from the lens of the 21st century. She was probably brought up to think that this was totally okay. So I'm guessing it wouldn't be as traumatic as I'm imagining it right now.
Yes. Marrying your siblings was very much a thing. So Hatshepsut would be marrying a brother, possibly a half-brother, and she would have known that basically her whole life. So not that it makes it less weird for us, but yeah. So there are two brothers in the running, Amenmose and Wajmose, and they were both strong candidates to be the next king.
I would have thought it was based on age.
Well, okay, so not automatically the firstborn is going to be the king or the pharaoh. Okay, that tracks. I sort of remember there were a lot of different political factors that went into play from everything you were talking about before.
Yeah, exactly. So Egyptians had a less clear order of succession than we think with typical monarchies, like eldest son, etc. They still want a son to be the next king, but it could be whichever son seemed the strongest contender. Also because, I mean, there are a lot of factors at play because we have multiple wives, so there's multiple options, right? Obviously, the great wife's son would be the most ideal and the strongest candidate, but that might not happen. Disease is a real thing. There's a lot going on to, like, play into who could be the next king.
Interesting.
Yeah.
This reminds me of episode 14, Turhan Sultan, and when we talked about the Ottoman Empire.
Yes.
This also reminds me of, like, sloths.
What?
You know, the mom would just drop. If they had, like, two baby sloths, and, like, they just, whoever was the weakest, they just dropped. And had like, you don't remember that from Costa Rica? They just like,
I don't.
Sorry.
That's like brutal.
Like, okay, don't matter. Like, that one's weak. Goodbye. And then they like, just like, sorry. It's like a strange
oh my
chair.
Gosh.
Y'all don't remember that?
Okay. No.
Sorry. Please continue.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, both Amenmose and Wajmose died before their father did.
So much for that.
Yeah, see, I told you. It's like you never know what you're going to get kind of thing. So another heir had to be found. Enter Thutmose II, Hatshepsut's half-brother, a kid of only 9 or 10 who was not in great health, but apparently was the best of the remaining options.
Imagine that.
Yeah. So Thutmose I died and Thutmose II became king and Hatshepsut's husband. She was likely 12 or 13 years old at this time.
Or 22, 23, depending what age.
Yeah, but we'll get there. Well, no, I think she was that age when she got married. It's just a question of how long he ruled.
Oh, okay. So she's 12, 13, he's 9, 10, he's younger.
Yes.
Is it weird that I'm relieved that she married a half-brother instead of a full-blown sibling?
I agree with you, Jessica. But okay, what's going to happen in this children-ruled kingdom? Are they going to cancel school? Make mandatory nap time? Demand every citizen has a toy? Like, what's... They're children.
Yeah, but they've been training for this, so...
They're still children.
They are. You're right. Well, Hatshepsut gave birth to a daughter, Nefrere, when she was 13 or 14. This is her only child from what I can tell. She might have had others that maybe didn't make it to adulthood. But her daughter would be trained and eventually take over for her as the god's wife.
Oh, so young.
Yeah. Also, Nefrere, what an interesting name. So god's wife was a position you kept for life? Or does Nefrere take over while mom is alive but wants to retire? Like, maybe mom's getting a little too old for Amun-Re?
Well, I will keep you in suspense for that right now. I'll tell you later.
Oh, okay.
It will all come to light.
Okay, okay.
So eventually, Thutmose II's bad health catches up with him, and he dies. So how long he reigned is up for debate. From what I could tell, it was either 3 years or 13 years. I've seen both popping up. So that also means how old Hatshepsut is up in the air a bit. She's either 16 or 26, which kind of goes back to her question of like her 10-year gap on birth year Unclear.
Hey, designers and curious minds. Ever wondered about the stories hiding within your building's walls? I'm Carrie Seaburn, structural engineer and host of Unstruct, the podcast that decodes and simplifies major concepts of structural design. Behind the math and physics, structural engineering simply predicts building behavior. Join me as we simplify the complex, making structural design accessible to everyone.
Nowadays, instead of measuring it via cost, we're saying, well, what about carbon, you know? We've got two levers now that we can, if an architect has an inefficient design, we can hit them with two levers, if you like.
The official casualty figure is 55,000. Everybody I talked to told me that the actual figure is at least three times as much. And I believe that. I mean, seeing what I saw, Turkish codes are good and they have been improving, but compliance was completely lacking.
Fluent in steel, concrete, masonry, and timber design, I'll bring you leading engineers to dissect the tales behind their building structure. Whether you're an architect, contractor, engineer, or just love a good story, this podcast is for you.
Yeah, beam penetrations. That's a fun topic on this project.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Unstruct. From within your walls, hear the story behind how your building stands today.
Okay, this makes a big difference. Whatever age she was, it determines, I think, how she rules. So, okay, you know what? We're all going to pick whatever age we want in our head, and we're going to go from there. Listeners, you're free to do the same.
Mm. Yep. And I guess we will see how much she accomplishes, and maybe that'll determine how long she lived, maybe.
In our heads.
Yeah. Well, either way, this is obviously a bit dicey for Hatshepsut, being as she only had one daughter.
Mm-hmm.
So the throne passes to Thutmose III, who is still a baby, or like a toddler, but like really young, even for Egypt standards.
Okay, so he's like a half-brother of hers, Thutmose III?
He's her stepson.
Oh, okay, yeah, okay.
The son of another one of the
ladies. Secretaries.
Yeah. Wives, concubines.
Okay, still, this is so annoying. Let the woman rule. Stop appointing people that can't write their own names, barely know who they are, only because they have a penis.
Right? And, like, maybe someone that isn't sickly. Obviously, Hatshepsut is healthy enough to rule, okay?
Yeah. Well, so, Thutmose III, he needs a queen regent because he's too young to rule, so.
Can he even talk?
Right, yeah. You might think that it would be his mother, but Hatshepsut steps up to the plate and helps this little baby boy out.
Of course she did. Also, why would she give up the power?
Mm-hmm.
And this is her future king slash
stepson.
Stepson.
Yeah, stepson. Because remember, she was the great wife, but her hubby had lots of ladies that he was trying to have babies with. So
we need you to keep reminding us of this.
Yeah.
It's a lot to follow. I understand.
Yeah.
Okay, but this sounds normal, right? There's a lot of times where the king is really young and the mama steps in. Again, this is giving me episode 14 Turhan Sultan vibes.
Right.
Yeah. But it's interesting because, you know, it's not the mom.
Right.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. So in this case, his mom was not as well known or high up. She was kind of a nobody. Maybe not a nobody. That's maybe harsh. But Hatshepsut took the job because she was obviously
a somebody,
more powerful and more known.
Yeah, yeah. You know, this is the most normal thing that has happened on this episode.
Yes.
So now that she's ruling, essentially, as a regent, she starts a temple renewal campaign in the king's name and starts building. Now, Egyptian architecture, typically covered in carvings and images of kings and gods to tell the histories and the accomplishments of the king. Well, you better believe that Hatshepsut was featured prominently on these temples. Sometimes Hatshepsut was even shown without Thutmose, which was very unusual. She was carving herself into history both literally and figuratively.
That's right.
Yes, thank you, Hatshepsut. Do you think chicken wing?
Yeah, a girlfriend better cough her name, because you know that there are probably some people who wouldn't, and they probably couldn't put the Tutmos because, you know, they kept dying. Sorry, not sorry. So she was still there.
Yeah.
So she better write her name, graffiti it, I don't know.
Yeah. So now she's essentially the de facto ruler of Egypt, right?
Okay.
And she's the god's wife, the second highest ranking religious figure.
Ooh.
But in order to secure her position further, she needed trusted advisors around her, such as Senemut, her lead administrator, and Amos Penekbet, who served as the state's treasurer. Within the first 5 years of regency, she hands over the god's wife duties to her daughter and focuses on ruling.
Okay, so that answers my previous question. End of suspense.
There you go.
But glad to know Hatshepsut was like, okay, I don't need two full-time jobs on my plate. I'm going to be the boss and watch him build and rule. And my daughter could do the king, whatever, the wife thing.
I just love that she had the treasurer as an advisor. I'm sure it's common, but that's strategic. And I love it.
Yeah. You got to know about the monies, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, she's like, I don't know about these little baby boppers. I need to know where my money come in at.
I feel like if we were to write a novella about this, she's also like having a thing with one of them and we don't know which one.
Mm-hmm.
There are some rumors about that, which again, but it's like unclear. By year 7 of being queen regent, we see that she is now claiming to be queen regnant.
Okay.
That's like a fancy way of saying that she's equal in status to Thutmose III.
So it's not a spelling mistake.
It's not like a spelling mistake. It's not. I wrote it right. So now she's being titled as a king. And she uses the trust and favor that she's built up over the last 7 years to continue and like assert herself into this position. But she also claims a supernatural event by the god Amun-Re that legitimizes her status as king. She says that he chose her and that it was divine providence that she should lead Egypt. Other texts say that she claims her mother conceived her through a visit from Amun-Re.
Shut up. What?
Yes. Work your way into mythology, demigod status. Do it. I am so jelly. I want to start a rumor that I'm Athena's long-lost daughter. You know? Different mythology, but same sentiment. I think I'm a roll with that.
You know, now we're in the godly status.
That's right.
We've entered.
So now Hatshepsut and Thutmose III are essentially co-leading, or co-leading in name. He's probably about 9 years old at this point.
Co-leading? He's 9. Is this a joke?
Yeah, like maybe he's like moral supporting it, you know, just like playing Legos and then homegirls do her thing.
Whatever you got to tell yourself, Egypt, to allow this woman to rule.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I mean, I think he's essentially moral supporting, you know what I mean? But it's more, I think also it probably looked better for her to not like kick him out.
Completely.
But to be like, we're ruling together, but really I'm doing everything.
I guess.
Yeah, the boy can barely form sentences.
Right. Something I read said that it almost was like there were two different monarchies, kind of like they just didn't really talk to each other. They just sort of were doing their own thing. But I think hers was more, and that might not be true. Maybe it was more integrated, but she was doing the most. So
naturally.
Obviously.
Duh.
So during her reign, she started lots of building campaigns, and she's widely known for the temples that she commissioned. She worked with the architect Ineni on many projects, but her boy Senemut also claims to be her chief architect on many projects.
Okay, there can be more than one architect in the kingdom. Hatshepsut has projects for everybody.
Yeah. And in our telenovela, my mommy is on Senemut as being her little love thing.
Oh, you're Team Senemut?
Yeah, I predict that's what it was. I think it was Senemut. If I had to write that story.
We could put that on a t-shirt.
Odds are good. Okay, let's get into a few of the things that she commissioned.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's get into the architecture.
I know. Sorry, there's a lot of buildup.
Yeah, we got the history part. Let's go to the architecture.
Yes. So, firstly, she worked to continue restoring the Karnak Temple, which was the main temple to Amun-Re. Her father had started this work and she continued it. She renovated the hypostyle hall that her father, Thutmose I, built at the temple. Ladies, do you remember studying this in history class or Karnak Temple at all? Or do you remember what a hypostyle hall is?
So Karnak Temple sounds familiar. If I'm not mistaken, hypostyle hall is a space where the roof is supported by a forest of columns, or a row of columns, I should say. I got poetic there for a second.
Yeah.
From the things you mentioned, I only remember what a hypostyle hall is.
Yes. And forest of columns is an accurate description.
Yeah.
So you got it.
Yay!
Yeah. Today, if you go visit Karnak, there is a really awesome hypostyle hall still there. But from what I can tell in my reading, what's there today was built after Hatshepsut, but she did initiate the design and did work on an earlier hall in the temple. But you can go and experience the hypostyle hall.
So she got the ball rolling.
Mm. Yeah.
She also constructed the Red Chapel at Karnak, which is a temple made of red quartzite. She reconstructed the Temple of Mut, along with a new pylon entrance. And she commissioned two obelisks at the entrance to the temple. At the time, they were the tallest in the world. Today, one that remains standing is the second tallest obelisk.
This is the oldest architecture trick in the book, establishing your power by literally having the longest stick.
Yep. And jokes on them. Power knows no gender. Homegirl knew what was up to build the tallest thing. And the red quartzite temple sounds so cool.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Her most famous building project, though, was her funerary monument at Deir al-Bahri. It is a three-story terrace structure cut into the cliffside. It's very dramatic looking as it sits against the mountain. It is located on the west bank of the Nile and is oriented facing the Karnak Temple, which sits on the east bank. They're on access with one another, and originally there was an avenue from the bank of the Nile to the monument, which was lined with sphinxes that had Hatshepsut's face on them. And this connection to Karnak and in turn Amun-Re was again to help solidify her position.
Architecture slash urban design gold. This is how you literally build your demigod legacy. Deir al-Bahri is an arc venture must. The pictures in your description are stunning.
Yes, I love the strategic building of legacy. It really does sound amazing. A structure for the gods.
Mm.
Lizzie, did you visit this temple?
I will keep you in suspense.
Oh, man.
What is up with you and the suspense today?
My gosh.
I like to make it interesting, you know?
I get.
If the story wasn't interesting enough, you gotta add that too.
Yeah, I'm leaning into it.
Okay.
Leaning in.
Yeah, you are led this way.
Mm. Speaking of hypostyle halls, this building has large colonnades all along the front that, as you go into the structure, become a grid of columns. Mm. And eventually, you come to a courtyard surrounded by a double colonnade on all four sides at the top level.
Pretty. Okay.
This is what dreams are made of.
Yes.
Another dramatic element as you look at the temple from the front is the large ramp that takes you to each level of the terraces.
Okay, ADA. So interesting. Sorry. It sounds very grandiose, though.
Yeah, Hatshepsut understood the assignment.
Yes. I was lucky enough to visit this temple a few years ago when I went to Egypt.
Okay.
Suspense over. But honestly, it's so cool to see it in real life. It's really dramatic. I also got to visit Karnak and see the obelisk that she commissioned.
Yeah. Friendly reminder to check out our show notes and socials for photos because, Lizzie, you're going to tell us that you have photos of this gorgeous soup of words that you just described to us.
Of course I have photos. Yes.
Also, Lizzie, you're just going to have to go again with Jessica and I and be our tour guide.
Yes. tell this story to us again while we're there.
Sounds great. So in building these projects, it should also be noted that Hatshepsut started to depict herself as a pharaoh. And what I mean is that she is shown with a male physique and red-brown skin, which was used to depict men, and wearing the full kingly crowns and outfits. This was another way that she aimed to squash any doubts about her position as king.
You tell it, Hatshepsut. Gender is fluid, honey.
Yes, it is.
Now, Hatshepsut's father, Thutmose I, was likely the first king to decide to bury himself on the west bank of the Nile in what we now call the Valley of the Kings. The thought is that he saw how the pyramids, which were the previous method of burial, were being robbed and ransacked. Being as they were pretty obvious, like where the tomb was located.
Mm-hmm. No suspense there.
Yeah.
And I mean, a reminder that kings were buried with lots of wealth and artifacts. So he decided that he should build a cave in the mountain where it would be difficult to find him and his possessions. So when Hatshepsut was king, she decided to extend the tomb of her father to be buried near him.
Smart and sweet. And homegirl was a king herself. So she already knew what was up. Think of snaps.
Maybe it was also in honor of the love she had for her father. But if I'm paying attention, then I know that this is just another pharaoh move from Hatshepsut.
Yeah, boss.
Yeah.
That's what it was, aka boss.
So it's inconclusive how Hatshepsut died, but she reigned for roughly 21 years, including the 7 years of regency. So she was between 37 or 47 years old when she passed away. And Thutmose III, who was now 23 years old, continued to reign after she died for another 31 years or so.
She managed to live a long time, well beyond Egyptian standards.
Right.
At that time.
And now previous toddler Thutmose III has huge heels to fill.
Mm-hmm. Or espadrilles.
That's right. Espadrilles. Now, there's a lot of speculation as to Hatshepsut's mummy and if it got moved and if we've even found her mummy. I'm not going to go into that, so look it up in your spare time.
You know, springboard for looking up what happened to her.
That's right.
And we've seen enough mummy movies, y'all. If we know where she is, don't touch that mummy, don't move that mummy, don't open that mummy, because we've watched enough. Tom Cruise isn't really going to save us. Like, it's just like...
Tom Cruise?
He was in the movie The Mummy.
Isn't it Brendan Fraser?
No, that's Brendan Fraser.
No. Brendan Fraser is the original The Mummy, but then there's another one that came out recently with Tom Cruise.
Oh.
I didn't see it, but because I'm loyal to Brendan Fraser, but sorry, just don't touch the mummy, okay?
But they got to move the mummy to the mummy museum so that we can see it.
But that's it.
That's it.
Yeah, don't read nothing on it. Don't click in buttons. Don't insert nothing. Gently move the mummy. If anything, say a silent prayer.
Cuidado.
Con cuidado, okay? Con cuidado. Fragile.
All right. Well, perhaps not surprisingly, towards the end of his reign, Thutmose III ordered Hatshepsut's name and likeness to be removed from any monuments, including her own funerary monument. This order was only partially completed as he died before it could be finished. However, her existence was fairly unknown until about 1822 AD, when hieroglyphics at her funerary monument were decoded. Part of the confusion was also because she depicted herself as a man. But her story was brought to light in the late 19th century.
Okay, that snot-nosed ingrate Hatshepsut runs the kingdom so he can have himself a proper childhood. And he does that? I don't know. Maybe she wasn't kind to him. I mean, I don't know.
Maybe.
But something tells me he just didn't like that a human with 2X chromosomes took his place and did it so well.
It's also like at the end of his reign, like all of a sudden he realized like, oh no.
I want all this for myself. Come on, idiot.
Yeah.
Jeez. And who freaking knows? But I'll tell you one thing. Hatshepsut built so much because she had that power, okay, that he couldn't match. And God don't like ugly, okay? He died before he could finish erasing her, okay? And I would say that I really enjoyed this story. And I must admit that when I read Hatshepsut in history books, I assumed that she was a man. Like, I was one of those people. Like,
oh, really?
Yeah, like, I remember I saw that name, but granted, I don't think I saw pronouns or anything. It was just like, Hatshepsut created this, Hatshepsut built that. And I just assumed it was a man. So I'm glad we told her story today and that her legacy will live on forever.
Yeah, despite that snot nose.
Yeah, in great.
I will say the first time I ever heard of her was on another podcast, so I didn't have a chance to think that she was a man. But I agree with you, Jessica, 100%. So happy we've learned her story on this show and that we can do our part undoing Crybaby Thutmose III's BS and bring her legacy to light. Honestly, top 5 episode for me.
Oh, yeah, me too. And I hope that when he moved her body, and like aka the mummy, I hope he got plagued with something and that's why he died. Anyway, great story. Definitely top 5. Good job.
Also, y'all, the first time you heard about Hatshepsut was in architecture history class because we studied her.
I remember that part. I was awake.
The first time I remembered in my adulthood after college was at a podcast.
Fair enough.
See, I remember the name. I was asleep for most of history class.
But they talked about her being a woman.
Really? I must have fell asleep during that part.
Yeah, because I remember, wow, that's so cool that it was like a female pharaoh.
I fell asleep during that part.
Clearly. All right, we've now reached the second part of our episode, the caryatid. A caryatid is a stone carving of a woman used as a column or a pillar to support the structure of a Greek or Greek-style building. In each episode, we choose a caryatid, a woman who's working today, furthering the profession through her work, and who ties into the historical woman of our episode. Without further ado, drum roll, please. May Al Ibrashi.
Yay!
May was born in Cairo, Egypt, and got a degree in architectural engineering from Ain Shams University in Cairo. She then got a master's in history of Islamic art, architecture, and archaeology at University of London, School of Oriental and African Studies. Then she got a PhD in archaeology from School of Oriental and African Studies.
Okay, degrees on degrees. All of these degrees in school sound so interesting.
Don't they? Makes a girl want to go back to school if I could afford it.
Ain't that the truth?
Yeah.
In 2011, she founded Megaura, an architectural practice. In 2012, the company partnered with the Built Environment Collective, BEC, an NGO specializing in place-based culture and urban development, to become Megaura BEC. The company works as both an architectural firm and an NGO to focus on sustainable and socially responsible heritage restoration in Cairo.
Ooh, demigod pharaoh Hatshepsut would be so proud.
She's smiling from her pharaoh tomb, wherever she is. But is Megaura BEC hiring? Because I want to restore monuments in Cairo.
Well, you should look into it.
I will look it up.
Yeah. They also run a program called Atharlina, which focuses on the neighborhood of Al Khalifa in Cairo on heritage conservation and adaptive reuse. This program partners with the Egyptian Ministry of Tourism and Antiquities.
I love this. I love this connection between what happened a gazillion years ago to what is happening now.
Yes, developing today, respecting / highlighting / continuing the legacy of these historic buildings and cities. Mm-hmm. This is amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
All right. Before we say goodbye, we want to say thank you to CMYK for the music, John W., our technical advisor, and most of all, thank you for listening.
Remember to check out our show notes for links to all of our resources on this episode, as well as pictures of projects that we've talked about.
We hope you enjoyed learning about today's lady and caryatid, along with our banter, and that you're inspired to find out more about them and other amazing professional ladies.
Please let us know what you thought of our episode. If you enjoyed it, please help us spread the word. Tell your friends, your colleagues, your history buffs. Tell them all. Also, give us 5 stars on iTunes and Spotify. Write us a review. This all helps us reach a wider audience and for more people to learn about amazing ladies with us.
Your support means everything to us. If you've enjoyed our content and want other ways to help us with our mission, you can support us by visiting our website for merchandise at shebuildspodcast.com/merch.
If you don't need any more swag, but you'd still like to consider supporting the research we're doing, you can donate to us on our website, shebuildspodcast.com/donate, or you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/shebuildspodcast. You can also find links to all of these items on our website.
She Builds Podcast is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. Gable Media is curated thought leadership for an audience dedicated to building a better world. Listen and subscribe to all the shows at GableMedia.com. That's GABLmedia.com.
We are excited to hear from you and for you to come back and keep learning about bosses with us. You can email us your thoughts at SheBuildsPodcast@gmail.com. Leave a comment on our website, SheBuildsPodcast.com. Or follow us on Instagram and Facebook at SheBuildsPodcast and on X at SheBuildsPod. Bye.
Bye.
Adios.